And I think we also started with the notion that, hey, we've got to really get the data cleaned up. And we realized as we went that we just need to get the data good enough.
Scaling to the way that we had to for this tool, what was the issues there?
I think the trick to scaling is, again, to start with these smaller pieces that don't have every bell and whistle. They don't have every single thing we thought of, but to get these kind of core things working.
So for leaders listening to this, what is one piece of advice you'd give them?
One piece of advice would be,
as one of the most trusted technology and AI companies in the world, we have clients worldwide and we build them customized solutions in every shape and size. But to ensure that we build cutting-edge, trusted, powerful, and accurate solutions, we start by putting our money where our mouth is, by building solutions that we use internally to ensure they are top of the line. We at IBM refer to that as Client Zero. Today, we're joined by Lori Miola, Chief Procurement Officer at IBM. We're going to discuss how we've made our procurement solutions work for Client Zero so that we can take them externally to major corporations, ensuring they are the speed, scale, and power that they need today. Lori, welcome to AI in Action.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So I asked you before we started, I heard you were a math teacher, and now you're the Chief Procurement Officer. Can you tell me a little bit about how you got here?
Absolutely. So you might think those two things are not related, but it turns out they are in a lot of ways. And one of the things that you learn as a teacher is how important it is to have a vision of the journey that you want to take and where you want to take your students. And then understanding that sometimes things don't always go in a straight path and being able to pivot and turn to get to an end objective. I also joke with some of my friends that there might be more similarities than folks might think about an educational environment and a corporate environment, right? And there's a lot of similar things that go on in companies, same as we've always seen since the day we're all in school together.
In your analogy about having a vision for the students, in the corporate world, who are the students?
The students could be ourselves. The students can be our teams. They can be our colleagues, and it could be our clients, right? It's all the folks that we have the privilege of interacting with.
So procurement has traditionally been seen as a cost center, not really a strategic partner. Why is that the common perspective?
Well, first of all, you're just kind of hurting me with that. That just hurts. But it's true. It's true. It's true to a lot of times. And I think this happens to lots of functions and companies where there's a specific operational objective, and the focus of that function becomes just on the act of committing those transactions or doing whatever those specific tasks are, and it somehow gets disconnected from the overall goal of the company. And I think procurement is a function that in many cases suffers from that. And I think that there's other functions as well that happens to.
When you stepped in as Chief Procurement Officer, what were the biggest challenges right away?
Well, I think some of the largest challenges that we had were we had a lot of data and we had most of the data that we wanted, but it was really tough to get our hands on it. We also had a lot of folks who were spending a tremendous amount of time on executional work and compliance-oriented work and not spending as much time as they might have wanted on strategic work.
So the process, the technology, this kind of stuff, were there challenges there as well?
There were. We had numerous systems, which is typical for companies our size. You frequently have multiple ERP systems. You might actually have multiple procurement systems where the data resides. And so in a landscape where you have a lot of different systems, a lot of data sources, that fragmentation can really make it difficult to move quickly.
Yeah. Was it siloed? Was it similar? Like a lot of companies we see, they have their data totally siloed, their processes totally siloed.
Yes. The data was very siloed. Not only was it in separate systems, but it wasn't always accessible to all of our colleagues either who needed it to do their work.
So what did procurement look like day to day for the employees and the stakeholders before making any changes?
Well, one of the things that we had gotten pretty caught up in was needing to do a lot of transactions and needing to do them in a way that was very, very compliant. But over time, our processes had become incredibly complex and we were really focused more on very detailed processes with many, many layers of compliance.
So what was the tipping point that made you say, we really, really need to transform this? Was there a moment or is there a metric that just signaled this that we have to change right now?
So I think the moment for me where the need that we were, kind of intellectually aware of became to a point of emotional realization was when we got a question from our CEO about what was going on with one of our vendors. And it took us, I think, 2.5 days to answer the question. And I was just kind of like low-key horrified.
Oh my God, my hands would be sweating. You got it from the CEO, like, yeah. And you're like, is it ready? You're like, you expect this to be ready today.
And I was accustomed to having an expectation that I should be able to answer that question in minutes if possible, or at least give an initial assessment on it. And I realized that because of our scale and complexity, and because of the siloed data, we had to actually take the request, chop it up in pieces, send that out to some folks who then sent that out to more people in this kind of cascading effect. And then it all had to be rolled back up and checked and double checked and triple checked until we felt like we had a single answer to give back.
And that was the impetus. That was the moment you're like, something has to change in our
process. That was the moment. I was like, I already knew and we were already on that journey, but that was the moment that I felt it in my heart.
I get a message from my second line asking for something and everything in my life stops until
right.
I answer it.
Exactly.
From the CEO, my God. Okay. So why was it so slow? Was it just the siloed data? Was it the processes? What about that had to change?
Well, it was a combination both of some data and systems challenges as well as a cultural challenge. So on the data and systems side, with the disparate systems we've talked about, right? The fragmentation, the siloing. But then on the cultural side, we also were in this mode of wanting to make sure that the answer was correct and needing lots and lots of layers of folks to have checked it. Because if some element was wrong, we were going to maybe blame somebody or someone would feel that they were in trouble, right? And so we had fallen into this culture where everything had to pass through the layers and come back through the layers. So we really, honestly, we had too many layers, and we had this fear of if we gave an imperfect answer, that was going to become some kind of an issue and someone would be in trouble.
This failure, what did it teach you before we even get into the solution?
So I think two things. One was, okay, we've got to get to the point where we can answer questions like this very quickly, right? That's kind of tactical and practical. But secondly, I also realized that we had a lot of cultural work that we had to do as well, and that it was, the problem maybe was going to be more of a cultural challenge than what I had originally estimated.
Can you tell me a little bit more about what you mean by the cultural challenge?
Yeah, I think that like all of us kind of know intellectually that when you go into a big transformation situation, you know that, hey, I've got data, I've got systems, I've got tools, I've got processes. You know those things are important. You also know, hey, I've got to do some change management. I've got some culture work to do. I think we underestimated the degree to which some of the way processes exist, or the reason systems are the way they are, or the reasons data is still siloed. I think we underestimated the degree to which that is actually driven by cultural challenges.
So this cultural shift needed to happen. But did you think that you had to bring everyone in, the entire team in, to talk explicitly, this is a culture that has to change? Or were you thinking, let's implement a solution and that culture will shift by osmosis?
Probably a little bit of a combination of both, right? I think any of us, if somebody comes and says, hey, we need to change things, our first thought is kind of a mix of like curiosity and excitement, but also fear and nervousness, right?
Of course.
And, you know, a lot of times we also think, hey, if I just put a system in place, that'll fix things, right? And that can be a big healing element in a journey. But it's really the combination of both of these things and starting down a path of iteration and experimentation where you just start to demonstrate that there's a different way to work, right? And we try to start to create a space where it's safe for people to try something new, for it to not always go well, to be able to pivot, and also to share with people what is the purpose of the change we're making and bring them on the journey with us.
So for this outdated model that you were faced with, can you tell me some of the changes that you made that didn't necessarily work?
Absolutely. So there's been a lot of them, right? We've tried a lot of different things, right? I think one of the areas that we started out in was thinking that if we got the data where it was, that was going to fix a larger percentage of the issues than it did, right? And I think we also started with the notion that, hey, we've got to really get the data cleaned up, right? And we realized as we went that we just need to get the data good enough, right? We need the data to be just good enough to keep making progress. We should be transparent about the condition the data's in. Hey, there's gaps here. This isn't quite perfect. This system isn't included yet. But that as long as we labeled those things and we were transparent about it, people were pretty forgiving.
I heard the same thing with our other client Zero project, Ask HR. I was talking to someone from the team. They were saying this was a big problem for even a lot of our clients. They're saying we have to get our data 100%. We have to have it perfect before we even start any of this process.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said, just go 70%. Just get it pretty good.
It's good enough.
Good enough, and get the process moving. And that's what you did at procurement.
That is what we did. And you know, another thing that we learned was spending too much time mapping your current processes is actually potentially a trap. Because we're a company of engineers and problem solvers,
yeah.
Right? And so we had lots of people who understood, well, the reason this process is like this and it has these extra steps is for this. And we realized fairly quickly, but not quickly enough, that going too far into that kind of cave of process understanding and current process mapping was actually a trap, because we were getting so focused on why stuff was. And we're such good problem solvers, right? We want to like figure this out, and we're proud that there was a problem. We solved it with this process. We realized that that was taking up cycles and it was keeping us from thinking big about the future. So we kind of backed off that and started thinking more just about where do we want to get to?
Were there any processes that you saw and eventually just got rid of? Like, just like, this is a process that we have, but actually we really just don't.
Yes.
You did?
A lot.
Really?
And it wasn't just processes, right? It was also activities, right? So my team, and I still joke about this, one of the first things I did was start looking at people's calendars with them, right? Sitting at their desk with them, because they would say, oh no, I have all these meetings I have to go to. And I was like, what do you mean you have all these meetings? I'm like, what meetings are you talking about? So we started sitting down. I said, look, like, bring me to your desk. Let's look at your computer. Let's look at your calendar. And I started sending people notes. Hey, this is Lori. I'm at so-and-so's desk. And this person does not need to come to this meeting anymore. Could we do this once a month instead of every single week? Or, you know, what is the purpose of this? We had a lot of recurring meetings. We were very cadence focused. So first we cleared out some time to do other things. Something else that we did, again, maybe not as much of a process, was the culture of excessive prepping. Like, there would be preps for the preps for the preps. So we started to undo that. I realized quickly that people felt that they had to have a presentation before they spoke to me. So I made a rule that I've never had before of no PowerPoints, right? Which is not actually a rule that we have. We do PowerPoints now. But for a little while, we went no PowerPoints just to make people feel comfortable that it was okay to call for help or to sit down and have a question. Something else we did was reset a culture on escalation, and that escalation is a tool. It's not a sign that we didn't control something or we didn't do well. It's a tool, right? And some of those changes then let us start to dig into the processes and say, hey, wait, this compliance check is redundant to this one, or this use of this other system we don't really need, we can capture the data here. But it was really those moves to free up capacity, I think, is where we started.
I have to be honest that it, for my day-to-day, like, hearing like, okay, get up in the morning, I look at my calendar, I'm like, when am I going to do my work?
You're already lost. Over already. The game's already over and you haven't started.
And then you bring up something really interesting, not just about the prep, but about the PowerPoint presentation. No, it's not a hard and fast rule, but it is interesting that, you know, people are going to come speak to you and they're going to be a little bit intimidated. So they're going to over prep and they're going to have this presentation. They're not going to be able to be totally authentic and open to you. And you caught on to that. Like, how did you pick up on that?
Well, some of it's prior experiences, right? Some of it goes back to being a teacher, because when you're a teacher, it's okay if the first answer isn't always correct. You're helping people get to the right answer, right? And then some of it's just my own experiences with bosses who've released me from that in the past and said, hey, you don't have to have thought through every single thing before you come to speak to me. You know, you should have, you know, somewhat of a understanding of the subject matter. Don't come completely unprepared, right? But I've had some great bosses in the past who've also freed me from some of those constraints. And I remember what it did for me.
I really hope that this cascades down. I mean, I love my boss and I love everyone I work with, but there is a lot of that within, I think, all corporate atmospheres where it's just over prep, intimidation, you know, not purposefully, but people know that they're talking to somebody who has significant power. They want to, it sounds wonderful. And I'm really, it's heartening to hear that this is happening up at the top at IBM. So when did you find the solution, the procurement solution, and what was it and how did you get to it?
So we're still finding it. Okay, this is a journey. But we realized that the foundation data was everything, right? And we knew we had all the data that we needed. We just didn't really have it labeled the way it needed to be. It wasn't accessible. So we really started with the data piece. And to your prior point about getting it good enough, right? So we said, look, we need to be able to have this data. We need it to be democratized so that anyone who's got the appropriate access can see it. And so we started bringing our data into the enterprise data reporting environment that the company already had set up. We had not joined that. Some of it probably out of not knowing how to do that. Some of it maybe being nervous about sharing that data, right? Lots of reasons potentially. And we started working with our partners in the chief data office and brought our data into that environment. And that was the start of it. And then once you've got some of this data in place, then it's easy to say, okay, the traditional way for me to expose this data would have been through a dashboard, which we have, which is wonderful. But also now I can use an assistant to be able to provide access to that data in a little bit easier, more authentic way and not force every one of my users to know how to navigate a dashboard. And that was really where we started. And then we've been building from there.
So you're talking about Ask Procurement. Can you tell me a little bit more about what's under the hood?
Absolutely. So not only is it these data foundations we've been talking about, but there's also assistant capabilities, there's orchestration capabilities, and we've got agentic capabilities. So it's the combination of all of those factors working together to be able to help us commit transactions and to bring insights more quickly to folks.
And I feel like the synergy between all those tools is what actually affects change.
It really is. We've been very excited that so far in this journey, we've been able to save over $2 billion.
Get out of here.
On vended spend. We have.
Really?
Indeed. And we know that this is helping us also to be faster and really provide better insights into the business to help them make smarter decisions.
So you start building the agents on top of good data. Not
good
perfect
data,
but
good,
good
data.
And then from there, you start building out the application. And in parallel, the data is getting cleansed.
That's
everything's
right.
Going on.
Everything's iterative. Everything is iterative. And you start with the most simple thing you can think of to bring, you know, really you want to bring insights to your business unit stakeholders. So in our case, I knew I had some folks who maybe hadn't seen their particular business unit or sub-business unit spend in the context of all of IBM. So we bring that to them. Something else we started doing was building out a procurement pipeline. We are buying from salespeople all day who we know have pipelines. We know they're tracking everything. We would want to have the same, right? So we've built that out, and now anyone can query that. We meet with the business, we meet with the CFOs and go over it. But just coming and showing someone maybe those two things is a great place to start a conversation.
So there are two things happening, right? Realistically, you're making something that's going to make IBM more efficient. But like with all our client zero projects, this is something that we want to eventually provide to our clients. Can you talk a little bit about that?
So most of the problems that we have, as much as I would like to think that they're special, they're incredibly not special. They're problems that everyone out there has, and any of our many procurement colleagues around the world who might be listening to this all recognize these challenges, right? We all have the same challenges. We all want to be more strategic partners. We all really want to be able to provide insights to the folks in our business. And we also want to be able to make sure that the routine transactional work happens very effectively. So all of the work that we are doing right now, we've tried to have a couple of principles. One, we're trying to use, you know, out-of-the-box standard system configurations as much as possible. We've been standardizing our processes very intentionally. We've tried to move away from we're IBM and we're special. I mean, we are incredibly special.
Obviously.
But in terms of processes, we don't need to be quite so special. So we've been trying to move ourselves into a much more industry standard configuration in terms of systems and processes and data models so that the things that we're working on will have relevance and could be easily transferable both to the clients that my team does delivery for as well as any of our many, many clients out there across the world.
When you're looking at making things standardized, obviously IBM has a very particular way of doing things, but you're trying to make it more generalized. How do you find out what is the standard or the generalized standard? How do you find this stuff out?
Well, some of it is having experience working in multiple companies. Some of it is talking to lots of other CPOs. I get to talk to other CPOs every week, which is one of the most fun parts of my job. And then part of it is relying on, you know, third-party firms who help us with benchmarking information. And then we have our own IBM Consulting and Institute for Business Value who also provide us tremendous insights on what is happening across companies.
So you mentioned foundation data a little bit. And just for someone like me who's not in procurement, can you talk a little bit about what kind of data? You don't have to go into, I know it's a tremendous amount and very broad, but like generally, what kind of data are we talking about?
So think about your checkbook at home, right? Which is no longer a checkbook, right? But metaphorically speaking, right? Your bank account. And in there is the names of folks that you have paid money to in the last year, right? So maybe there's your mortgage provider. Maybe there's your favorite place to go for dinner and drinks in the middle of the week, right? So that's the first kind of data that we think about is here's the list of all the folks that we've paid and how much we paid them and on what date. That's a very key rudimentary fundamental type of procurement data. Another kind might be the list of all the purchase orders that have been issued, right? And then we can enrich that. How much of this purchase order has already been invoiced? How much of it's remaining? And you go through that. What's the list of all of our contracts, right? So it's simple concepts to start with that become complex as we enrich them. But we found the best way is to start with that simplest view. Like, what if I can just show you everyone you spent money with in the last 12 months? That's going to give you some insight right there.
So now when you're collecting data now, you're now form fitting it to this better way, the cleansed way that you have it. So
that's
like
right.
All new data that's coming in is going to be in this nice format. And then as you continue to build the application, the data that needs to be cleaned up will be cleaned up in parallel.
Well, that's the idea. The reality is you actually start to tag the data in better ways bit by bit.
Even new data, like new data that's coming in?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. So we are iteratively making changes to the way we collect the data and enriching it. Because if we realized if we waited to come up with our perfect data plan, we wouldn't get anywhere.
So
right?
Even talking about good enough is even the planning and the...
Yes, for sure.
I thought the planning would be done and then you work on forfeiting.
No. The vision's there.
The
you know where
there.
You're going,
okay.
Right? But if you wait to do all that, it's really tough to get going. And then honestly, it's hard to get buy-in from your senior leadership. If you say, hey, I'm back here working. I'm getting the data cleaned up. I'll be available to help you save some money in 2028. That's probably not a great answer, right? So is my data perfectly tagged yet? No, of course not. Nobody's is.
So this, I feel like this is part of the culture shift because like you said, all of us are problem solvers and engineers and we want it to be perfect. I mean, I want it to be perfect even before I started.
I was supposed to say yes to that
what?
Question you just asked me. I was supposed to say, oh, yes, it's all tagged now.
Oh, were
like,
you?
But, well, not really. Fine. Not really. But in our old way of thinking, I would have felt compelled to say, oh, yes, yes. And then think, oh, no, I don't know if I have that all done. Now we feel much more free to say, no, of course it's not perfectly tagged yet. We're on the journey.
From the top. Because I heard it. We had a top to top that I was lucky enough to be a part of. And they mentioned the 70% data good enough to the C-suite. And I was like, so that I heard it there. So it's really coming from the top down.
It absolutely is.
I guess
it has to,
right?
It frees you.
And it's leadership. Really comes down from leadership because you can't have someone like me being like, listen, leadership, it'll be ready when it's ready. You have to have it coming from the top down.
That's absolutely right. Knowing that Arvind and Joanne and Jim are comfortable that we are on the journey and that we're showing incremental improvement is so freeing for us and is really helping us move faster.
Do you think this is a process that other enterprises can employ?
For sure.
All right. Do they have to start from step one? Do they have to simplify the data? Or are the new tools that we're building, are they going to be right away skipping all the pre-work?
Well, I don't know if you can skip all the pre-work. That sounded like a trick question to the teacher. That sounded like a little bit of a trap. I'm not sure. But I think that what we are trying to build is something that the other folks that we're working with, they can look at where are they at on their journey right now and figure out where to start. And you don't have to do a huge program. You don't have to get it all perfect before you can start. You can say, where are we right now? What is our number one need to be impactful and strategic to the business? And then let's start there.
But what's the process there? So you give the spiel to the client. You say, listen, you don't have to have all your data set up. We could use these tools and we could show you results like this. Is that the play? Because we say we do it ourselves.
That's right. We do it ourselves. And I think one of the things that's important about these conversations is to listen, right? We need to listen to our customers, understand what it is that they need. And then we want to be able to say, okay, this is where you're at in your journey. This is what you think you need to be strategic in your C-suite today. Maybe getting a chance to be strategic means we fix some tactical problems. Maybe I need to attack the mid-tail spend or the tail, right? It depends. It differs in every single company. But we say, where do you need help? Where can we create enough benefit that we start that flywheel for growth, right? How do we peel up that kind of beginning either investment in terms of either time or money that it becomes a virtuous cycle.
So I wonder if the timing, the AI agentic revolution, I wonder, it came during the process of this, right? Does that help as a way of being like, this is an agentic solution to your problem? Does that help like convince people to be like, I have to get on the boat for this?
I think it's a huge help. I think though, it also gives us pause in terms of realizing how important it is that we understand what are the business outcomes we're driving and what are the definitions for us of what is good and what is not good. And it's that can do with outcomes, that can do with processes, right? That can do with the data itself. I have never spent this much time in my career thinking about definitions.
Why? What do you mean?
Which is super interesting, right?
What do you mean by that?
Because so many of us for so long have relied in our teams on these like knowledge bases that have developed over time. And everyone kind of knows, oh, the right way to do this is such and such, or the wrong way looks like this. We may not have written that down anywhere. And now as we're building agents, I have to be able to tell the agent, this is what's going to be good and this is what's not good. And if it's not good, this is what I need you to do.
But we have all these, like now agents, like I'm a big tech guy. I'm obsessed with it. I build them at home. I really do. I have all these agents to do work for myself. And there's so much opportunity. So for you, looking at the product that we have, do you have anything on your vision board that you want? Like you say, okay, in the future, I want to have this capability.
The capability that I am most after right now, and we're actually doing some experiments with some of our partners on this, is being able to essentially interact with all of my enterprise data in the same exact way that I would at home with Claude or ChatGPT or another product like that. That is my number one fantasy scenario, where I can ask those questions. And it's not just my structured data, it's also all of my unstructured data. And then all of the sentiment data about what's happening in the enterprise. This is my fantasy, right? I'm not there.
Oh, but that's so wild though. That's like the dream, right? You just have this one pane of glass that you can talk to naturally. Like, is that changes everything. And the whole way we interact with any of these complex applications has now been boiled down to, can you just talk to it? Rather than like click through and navigate. That's wild. So when you see that, then you start thinking big like you're thinking now.
That's right. Because it frees us up to start asking questions. Like sometimes we shy away from asking really big questions in a business context because we know how much effort it is for our teams maybe to go get the information or how long it will take. So like as a business person, think about what are the questions you would ask this afternoon if you knew you could get the answer in seconds or minutes? There's all kinds of questions you would ask that you're not asking today. And this to me is like, in addition to all the exciting things that are out there in terms of productivity and efficiency, it's this idea of what can I do if I can repurpose the thought process and the strategic thinking of folks in my team to ask questions that we just didn't even ask before because they were too hard or took too long.
And your thought is like, if we have all of this data and we have all access, not only just access to it, but a way of understanding what the data is, not just how to query it. Because we say, okay, it's a given. We have structured data, we have unstructured data, we can get that. But now a way to untangle it with these big, did you think we would be here at any point? Like when you started, is this a place that you thought we would get to?
This exact spot? No.
No, right?
Like, I knew we were going somewhere big. I was excited for it. But like the amount it's changed already in the time I've been here is just, it's exciting.
Well, how long have you been here?
About 2.5 years.
So you were here at the GPT, like the first generative model. So the agents really weren't a thing yet.
No.
Oh, that must have been wild. The second you heard that, okay, not only can this just answer, you know, generatively, but now it could do actions and it could actually do work for you and collaborate with other agents. That must have been just like a light bulb in your head when you first heard about it.
It was very exciting. One of the reasons I wanted to come to IBM was because I knew I would have access to technology here I'd never had anywhere else. And a lot of times in procurement, we're not the top priority for getting tech dollars, right?
Wild.
In lots of companies, which is crazy, right? But that was one of the many reasons I wanted to come to IBM was I knew I was going to get access to technology to be able to create and build things that had only been in my head before.
So do you also anticipate just what it would be like to scale at a level that IBM needs to scale at for our own internal processes? Like it's a humongous company. Like scaling to the way that we had to for this tool? What was the issues there?
First of all, scaling at this scale is awesome.
Yeah.
It's also makes your brain hurt sometimes, right? It's definitely causes some brain pain certain days. What we realized was the more we could stay data focused and the more we could be in good enough mode with a core set of data and a core set of processes and not trying to get to everything and start to build common ground around that, we could free ourselves from, oh, in this market, it has to be done this way. Or in this commodity, I'm still using this other system, right? And so I think the trick to scaling is, again, to start with these smaller pieces that don't have every bell and whistle. They don't have every single thing we thought of, but to get these kind of core things working and bring them up to scale and let people see it and get a taste and say, hey, I know it's not perfect. I know it doesn't have a million things you might want, but this is your first taste and think about what we could do next. And by the way, now I've got an opportunity to come to you and say, hey, did you like what I showed you last week? Because you know what? I know you love this process. I know you think you need this, but if I could give you something different and still meet the need, could you change what you're doing so that we can grow more together?
So at this point, it still seems like it's like during this point in the process where you're starting from these first principles within IBM, it's still very focused on IBM. When was the switch to be like, okay, let's generalize our method a little bit so we could then provide it to other customers? At what point did that start?
Well, I think that's part of what we've always done, right? I think that's been part of our culture always is that we try to take the expertise and the scale that we have, right, and bring that to clients as much as possible. And that was one of the things when, you know, the opportunity to come to IBM was presented to me was that this was one of our goals was really to take our technology, especially in the AI space, figure out how to use it at scale and bring it to the customers, right? So when I came, it was more of a, it was the vision, right? I think as we saw how quickly we could get some progress with these good enough approaches, that's when I started to get much more excited about the reality of doing that and doing it quickly.
For the C-suite listening, and they want to believe in the 70% is good enough, what do you do for the other 30% of the data?
So you label it, right? You start out by saying, okay, here's what I know. This is 70%. This is our invoices in 70% of our countries. This is 70% of the fields, like whatever that is. And you clearly label and say, this is what I do have. This is what I can't see right now. And I'm showing you that. And then you put that label on every single thing you show people. And then you say, this is what I'm going to work on adding to it next. And then after that, and you just be transparent about it. And it's amazing how forgiving people will be if you're just upfront about that, as opposed to, oh, here's all my data and it's perfect. And then they find one thing wrong.
Like,
and now
okay,
you're kind of on the defense, right?
That's terrifying. But we live in a world where this probabilistic models, like all the stuff we're doing, I think people are getting a little bit more comfortable with not everything being perfect all the time.
Much more.
I think it's like just the perfect time. And I'm assuming that's what happened within our own company. Well, other than it looking to be the most efficient way of achieving what we want to achieve. But I wonder if that helped, like that idea that it doesn't have to be perfect, but we get things done.
I think we've had some tailwinds just in terms of how the world itself is moving. There's no question about it. And I think some of those external events actually kind of validated our thoughts about what direction we needed to go and gave us a little more courage, I think, to keep going. Because it's like, okay, wait, it's not just us that has these changes to make.
So we started out talking how procurement is often seen as a cost center. Where do you see procurement going?
Well, I think procurement is one of the most strategic functions in a company because it is probably one of the only functions that is able to directly influence the margin, right? Because the work that we do both directly supports revenue and it also supports the cost base, and revenue minus cost equals margin, right? So we have a chance to play on both sides of that in the most simple terms, right? And it's far more complex than that, but I think that we have the opportunity to be the biggest margin expanders and to be able to create a source of funding to reinvest in a business to help it grow. Whether that's through acquisition, whether that is through new product development, right? Bringing in new tools, whatever those things are, it is probably one of the easiest places to get the additional monies we need for investment.
So for leaders listening to this, and they want to turn procurement from a cost center into a strategic partner, what is one piece of advice you would give them?
One piece of advice would be find your good enough data and then get up your courage. Go find a couple friends in the C-suite and go show it to them and ask them for their partnership.
Lori, thank you so much for coming and spending a little bit of time with me. And to all of you watching and listening, there's more to come.